This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Maybe that CD's a little bit too old. So what I'll do is I'll go to another CD that I've got ready to play. This one is from Bob McNeil, and it's called Where You Can't See the Border, and it's from his CD, Lost Stars. So here's Lost, Where You Can't See the Border from Lost Stars. So that was a song from Lost Stars by Bob McNeil. And it's Where You Can't See the Border, which is particularly, it's a lovely CD actually. So, well, it's been a bit wet recently here, and I hope you've all managed to stay warm and dry. And if you have had a flood through, it's not been too bad. I found a picture this morning of a flood, which flood water from the Waiheni through the north end of Greytown in 1955. And it looked pretty bad. And I know that there was another flood in about 1983 or 84 when one of my neighbours tried to rescue his mum's chickens and got swept up against the barbed wire fence. And he tells me that he bears the scars to this day. So please take care. If it's really wet, do look after yourselves and take care, because it's a bit much. Risk yourselves. Stay home, stay dry. I hope it's not so bad now. So today I want to just acknowledge that Anzac Day is coming up, and although we're a long way away from the main cities, we still had quite a lot of things happen up here in the Wairarapa. And I had, of course, known about Featherstone prisoner of war camp and the World War II stories of the Japanese insurrection. Well, it wasn't so much an insurrection, it was a miscommunication. They just didn't communicate with each other, with the Japanese prisoners of war and the soldiers, and everybody got scared by the sounds of things, which is often what happens when people don't understand what's going on, and with tragic consequences. And they have made a beautiful monument to commemorate the misunderstanding and to make sure that in future there would be communication, there wouldn't be miscommunication. And I really acknowledge that, because I think that so often happens, and that causes wars. And of course we've got all the stuff going on in the Middle East at the moment, which is tragic, because it's people who are civilians who are really bearing the brunt of it. But I wanted to talk about the World War I history that includes suspicion, detention, and a six-man escape of German prisoners from the military camp. And most local history fans know about the Featherstone prisoner of war camp. And we all believe it was about captured Japanese prisoners. But there was more to it than that. If you flash back a couple of decades, Mark Pacey says, to World War I, it became clear fighting would not be over by Christmas 1914, and the need for more men to be trained and sent overseas rose. Here in the Greater Wellington region, the main army training camp at Trentham was no longer big enough for the volumes of men required. A new camp was established just north of Featherstone. The new camp was big. It could house several thousand men at any given time, more than the population of nearby Featherstone. Over the course of World War I, 60,000 men passed through this camp. Towards the end of the war, the camp was mainly used for storage as well as being a military hospital, but it also had another purpose. During the war, anyone of German heritage was rounded up on suspicions of being a spy or acting to help the Central Powers of Germany, Austria-Hungary, the Ottoman Empire and Bulgaria to support them. Near the war's end, the World War One end, Featherstone was chosen as the ideal place to house these prisoners for processing before they were shipped back to Germany. Featherstone had a railway connection and it wasn't that far to the docks in Wellington. It would just be a matter of keeping the prisoners at the Featherstone camp until a ship was ready, putting them on the train and sending them on their way. Unfortunately, not all of those kept in the Featherstone camp wanted to wait. Some had been living in New Zealand for decades and didn't think they should be detained, and certainly not sent back to Germany. And so on April the 16th, 1919, six prisoners made a break for it. These men were Charles Hadley, a sailor who was tattooed on both arms with a scar on the right ear, Martin Nock, also a sailor with tattoos, Alfred Krant, whom the paper initially named as Alfred Kraut, J.J. Sling, who was discovered to be German after being discharged from military service, William Otting, also in the tattoo club, and Walter Mormister, who, in keeping with the type, was tattooed on both arms. I wonder what it was about tattooing that was made them suspicious. But anyway, maybe they had Deutschland or something tattooed on them. On breaking out of the camp, the six men went their separate ways. The first of them wasn't recaptured until 5 days later, when Schling was caught in Martinborough. On April 24th, Germans recaptured was the headline in several papers. Otting and Mormister were both caught in Howrah. Well, that's, the Finnish get quite a long way away. They said on their capture that they escaped to try and get back to Germany. They had both been in prison since the start of the year, the war, and wanted to get back to their family. The fourth prisoner, Nock, handed himself into police in Wellington on the same day Otting and Mormister were captured. This left just two prisoners still on the run. However, their freedom didn't last much longer. On April 25, two suspicious men were noticed walking around the streets in Hastings. Police were called and the two men were identified as the escaped Featherstone prisoners. Krant and Hadler made no fuss when approached by police and were sent back to Featherstone to join their feather escapees to await their fate, which of course was to be posted back to Germany. Extraordinary, isn't it, how you think people who had been living here for decades were still regarded with suspicion. And the same thing happened in World War II, of course, when a lot of people, both men and women, and children as well, were kept safe, sent to internment camps. So it wasn't regarded as as being in prison, but they were regarded as potential risks and potentially sending information to the opposing sides, and particularly the Japanese and weirdly some Chinese in America, in California, and also of course in Hawaii. So it's a hard time, and it's during war, and I think it's well worth remembering, and I always try and go to an Anzac Day service, because I just think if we remember, maybe we won't get tangled up in it again. At least I hope not. So there's lots of information about the Featherstone Camp in Cobblestones Museum. It tells the story of people who went to war. And there's also all the stories of mainly young men who went to war, but also some young women as well. Because, of course, lots of nurses went to war to look after the wounded and the injured. And there'll be, this coming Saturday, the 25th, there'll be services throughout the Wairarapa. And I would encourage you to go to one, not to celebrate, but to remember the bravery of these young men and young women who went off thinking that they were, that it was essential to keep a future peace. So hopefully we'll try and get some more peaceful times in the future here in around the world. So, on that, I'm going to try and play Eggs in the Basket again, because it's about having some eggs in your basket. Here we go.
It is all you say aloud.
Whoops, I think what we'll have to do is play another CD. So I'm going to play you a lovely song from We Mavericks Heart of Silver CD. This one is Heart of Silver.
Will you take this heart of silver? It's been tarnished by time. No golden glow from deep within. It only shows a blackish tinge. It ain't warm unless it's pressed against your skin. How I wish that I could give you gold to buy back all you've lost. All I have is this old thing, but it came at a cost. This heart of silver, heart of tin, rings with all the space within. It's a good luck, cold heart, precious thing, this heart of silver. Will you take this hand? It holds my memories. It's written my story. It has been my shield. It's all I have that'll keep me safe. This is how much I trust you. I'm all full away. It's skin and bone and cold and shaking, but it's yours to hold. A good luck, cold heart, precious. but I can only offer you this little thing to hold, this heart of silver. It's a good luck, cold heart, precious thing.
Heart of Silver, a lovely song. The lady who wrote that, her name is Victoria Vesenger. She wrote it about, she said she didn't feel as if she would ever have a heart of gold because she wouldn't be good enough, but she might be good enough to have a heart of silver, which I thought was a particularly nice thought. So, Victoria Vesenger's Heart of Silver with, and she and her partner write often together and they write the music together. I wanted to share with you, a little bit of a book I'm reading at the moment called The Ballad of Joe Tyhappy by Glenn Colquhoun. And, it's a wonderful book of poetry because it's full of drawings. It's like a manga comic, but poetry. And this one is a wreath of sonnets, and it's about Chunuk Blair. So the idea of this poetry, it's a narrative poem telling a story, and it's I'm holding it up to the camera at the moment if you're watching on TV. If you're not, it's got a lovely painting of obviously New Zealand hills and a man standing with his guitar slung over his shoulder, as they often are. And he's, you know, obviously off somewhere. And this bit is a wreath of sonnets. One, a gathering of men. Our deaths alight too soon upon the branch. The gods would kill to pick the fruit of such as find inside the ordinary glance. Our first, our last, our middle and our must. From Masterton they gathered off their farms. The grey gave up the herd diggers to the flood. The sailors' arms in Seatoun for the yarn sent 10 good men and 10 good pints of blood. To Suvla Hills and to Anzac Cove, the bleeding country bleeding went to war. All healing like a dog upon the bone, the country bleeding, bleeding wanted more. Joe Tyhappy left behind the missus, not before he died, he dried and stacked the dishes. Not before he dried and stacked the dishes, and godly God, godly dipped to tips in starch his figure eight, pontificate moustache, and signed the Anzac up the bloody ditch to rhododendron's blur at steady clip, 3,000 thudding boots and dust to march. At tabletop they waited in the dark for Chunk Bear, the devil in their midst. Jaw tie happy rhododendrons tended, wooden stem and flower wove together. His fingers, not delinquent, down to bone, would not ease until an ending ended. Grief, a wreath for every soldier measured by king and country and the wife at home. So, I totally recommend the Ballad of Jaw Tie Happy. I got this copy. It's five stories, and it's a prologue and an epilogue, and it's really, really worth getting. Okay, so back to things that are going on here. So I thought I would play you another song from Lost Stars by Bob McNeil. This one is Carpenteria. So let's have Carpenteria.
Saw the coast near Monterey, shadows made by islands out to sea. Pushed on north for the Wilhelmina. She was 19 and I was 21. Never seen the ocean, baptized by the morning sun. She stole my heart away that day, that summer in Carpenteria. This ain't my home, but I'm going home, in case she turns around, somewhere south of Carpenteria.
Carpenteria by Bob McNeil from his album Lost Stars. So, I just want to point out that in Cobblestones there's a lovely, lovely exhibition which was developed to mark the centenary of the end of World War One. And it showed the township as it stood on the return of the soldiers in 1918. It's called Greytown, 38 sections and 38 stories. And the centrepiece is a scale model of the buildings in existence at that time. There's a wall display that includes information and images about each of the 1 acre sections that were originally surveyed. There's a detailed description of the block land purchase from the Tangatawhenua and its subdivision under the Small Farms Association settlement. So it's a really good background to the way Greytown was set up, because it was quite different. It was a planned inland settlement, quite different from previous settlements, which had been mainly along the shoreline. So looking back at the history, the very existence of the museum and its collection is the result of the dedication by many volunteers, starting with the Greytown JC's chapter in the 1970s. The museum is still run by volunteers, and it's very much about the Wairarapa. It's not just Greytown. I know people say, oh, it's about Greytown. It's not. It actually has buildings from throughout the Wairarapa, and it really is about celebrating our heritage. And once we get a new and we're looking to do another new exhibition in the front of the museum, so that as you enter, you will come into a piece of history about the iwi and Papawai's Marae's involvement with the setting up of Greytown, and a bit about the history, because they have a fantastic history. I also recommend that when you go to Greytown, go and have a look at the memorial gates on the Soldiers Memorial Park, because it gives you an idea of the contribution that was made to the efforts and the sacrifice that happened in World War One, and then as you go up to the memorial bus, the sacrifice that was made in World War Two and since then. And then I suggest, please do go to Featherston and go and have a look at the memorial park with the beautiful, if you go in spring, the cherry trees which have been planted there will be in bloom, and they're well worth looking at. Okay, before we finish today, I'd like to play you another tune. And this one is another one by Wee Mavericks, and this one is called The Bed You Made. So let's hear The Bed You Made off Wee Mavericks' Heart of Silver album.
You gotta sleep in the bed you made, and I made it tight as it could be, with hospital quarters and show pillows and a lovely cover that I keep quite clean. Now I gotta sleep with my feet locked down, arms by my sides, just to fit in between the sheets, but it stops me falling out at night. It's just as I've been taught, and it's all that I see. So anybody ever asked of me to fold with symmetry and tidy right well, and keep a clean mind and a clean table, sleep in the bed you made.
your sickly babe and wrap her up tight to say the wilted stretch is just tiredness. In the dark, it ain't the time to exercise.
That was lovely. That was The Bed You Made. And obviously it's about sleeping in the bed that you make for yourself. It's quite interesting. I've been looking more into the way we name things. And the way we named New Zealand. And I've been reading in Streetwise by Gareth Winter. Gareth is fantastic. He was the archivist for the Wairarapa for many years, and he wrote a number of books which are really informative. But I did have to laugh at this one. I was talking about main streets in Greytown. He says, there's a very pragmatic streak running through the New Zealand psyche, a streak that leads us to be very prosaic when it comes to naming things. The Maori name for the northern North Island, of course, is Te Ika a Maori, Maui's fish, and the South Island, Te Waipanamu, the greenstone. And to the new settlers, however, they were just the North Island and the South Island. A similarly prosaic pattern was applied to the main streets of Greytown. The main street, originally called Main Road, was changed to Main Street. The streets to the east, west, north and south of the town were given similarly prosaic names on the old map. The names of the Greytown directional streets, but which are basically on the boundaries, were north, south, east and west. So we lived in North Street for a number of years before we moved to Carterton. And it is the most furthest north street that you can get. Because beyond that, you would definitely be getting into the flood zone, I would say. So I don't think it's ever going to be, at least I hope it's not ever going to be built on. At a borough council meeting in June 1895, it was pointed out that the streets had never been officially named. A special committee was formed to report on the suggestion that the opportunity to apply better names should be taken. Main Street was to become Jackson Street in honour of H.H. Jackson, an early leader of the settlement. East Street was to be named Wakeland Street in honour of R.A. Wakeland, and West Street was to be called Tully Street after another early settler, John Tully. Not every day was in favour of the idea. The councillor, and then he was later the mayor, D.P. Loseby, suggested that the council, as far as possible, should select native names of a short and pleasing nature. But in the end, no changes were made, with the old names remaining. In 1901, another attempt was made to change the names of the main streets. Following the death of Queen Victoria, it was thought appropriate that Main Street should be renamed in her honour. When the matter was brought up in council, Councillor Duff further moved that West Street be called Tully Street and East Street Jackson Street. The proposal was amended to change East Street to Queen Street and West Street to Princess Street. This was carried and the changes made, but then a month later the council had a change of heart. It was thought that the name changes would make too much trouble and inconvenience to property owners in the streets concerned, and the whole proposal was dropped. Greytown reverted to its directional street names. So there we go. And very sensible too. I was interested to see that the newest tube line in London is called the Elizabeth Line. And there's also the Jubilee Line. But QE2 Park, of course, is named after Queen Elizabeth. Although, being a Scot, I don't actually think she should be called Queen Elizabeth II, because she's Queen Elizabeth I of the United Kingdom, because the first Queen Elizabeth of England was actually only Queen Elizabeth I of England. So there. So that's a thought. I get my rebellious streak on sometimes when it comes to being Scottish and the takeover of various things. But there you go. Now, it's almost time for me to say goodbye for the moment. If you would like me to talk about anything or find out anything, please do get in touch with me through Cobblestones Museum. I'd love to hear from you, and I really enjoy meeting people. Every now and again, somebody stops me and says, oh, yes, I was listening to you on the radio, and I heard you say about something. So I love hearing from you. So do get in touch through Cobblestones Museum. Take care out there. I don't know if this world weather's over yet, so everybody, look after yourselves, and I'll be back again. So, bye for now.